It's the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 132. I am your host, Adam Mangum. In this podcast, it's Matt and I back again, and we talk about the bowl game and kind of a depressing weekend in BYU sports. We do some of our season takeaways. We also play Who's on the Hot Seat with Coach Bronco Mendenhall, Offensive Coordinator Robert Anai, and we also look at the 2014 schedule and how many wins we think off the top of our head the Cougars might have in the upcoming season. We also talk about basketball and some of the problems they're having, and we also talk about and preview the rest of the bowl games we didn't cover in the last podcast, starting with the games on New Year's Day. Once again, this is the Rise and Shout Podcast. Catch us on iTunes. Always take a look on loyalcougars.com, and you're going to listen to us right now. Matt, it's the Rise and Shout Podcast, and, well, let's just start off by saying this weekend was not great as a BYU fan.
No, not so much. Not so much a great weekend for the old Cougs.
No, so this is going to be like, is it going to be depressing? Is this podcast going to depress people, Matt?
I hope not.
Of course it's not. We're awesome.
Yeah, just Rise and Shout, baby.
That's Rise and Shout Podcast, that's right. And we have a bunch of Tweetbag questions. They are all from the same person.
From the biggest Tweetbag of them all.
That's right, Jed Higginson at Jed Higgy. So let's start out with one of them. Okay, Matt, before we get to the bowl games and some of the more serious stuff. All right? Favorite movie of 2013?
I'm ready. What?
Are you talking?
I was talking, but I had finished.
Okay. This is awkward. We shouldn't be having this sibling rivalry stuff on the podcast. All right. Favorite movie of 2013 and which movie you're most looking forward to seeing in 2014? Matt, did you have a favorite 2013 film?
Now, can this be a movie that I saw in 2013 but didn't necessarily come out in 2013?
I think he's going for movies that came out in 2013, but you can interpret it however you would like.
Then I'm going to go ahead and say The Hobbit.
Ah, you did not see it last year.
I just saw it yesterday.
The first Hobbit, not the second
yes.
Hobbit.
Yes, actually it was Saturday night.
Ah, on the Blu-ray.
Actually, I watched it on the HBO.
On the HBO, I've heard of that.
One of those channels. I'm in like a free something. They were giving it to me free.
Sure, you are.
I DVR'd it. Because I wanted to go see Hobbit 2, but I didn't watch it in time to go see Hobbit 2, so I saw Frozen on Saturday instead.
Ah, so Frozen might be my pick for 2013.
If I had to pick one that I saw that came out in 2013, I probably would pick Frozen. It was really good.
I mean, it's hard to say because Iron Man 3 was pretty awesome, as was The Wolverine. Have you seen The Wolverine?
No, I never did see that one.
Shame on you. Shame on you.
But Iron Man 3 was really good.
Iron Man 3 was really good. It might be Iron Man 3 for me. But Frozen was, I think, it's Disney's best effort, not counting Pixar films, since, I don't know, Lion King, maybe? A long time. And please don't say Tangled. You're embarrassing yourself if you say that.
No, stop it.
Embarrassing yourselves by saying that. So, and who knew Veronica Mars could sing? I didn't know.
But you know, I never saw was Gravity. It was supposed to be pretty good.
I didn't see Gravity either. I wanted to, but you know, we have too many children, you and I. We have six between the two of us.
That makes it sound like you and I have children together.
Well, that's
very weird the way you said that.
Impossible and gross. Come on, dude. So I don't even know how to recover from that.
There will be no recovery.
There will be no recovery. Well, this is a way to start it off without being depressing.
But I'll tell you what, another movie I really enjoyed in 2013 was 42.
Oh, 42 was excellent.
42 was a good movie.
Really hard to watch in a way, you know, because it's really raw. They don't really hold back from the racism, but it was excellent. And the guy that played Jackie Robinson was really good.
Yeah, I think he did an excellent job. I also, surprisingly enough, I really enjoyed Star Trek Into Darkness, and I had not seen the other new Star Trek film before I went and saw it. I don't know that I had seen a Star Trek movie since the one with the whales.
Yes. Have you seen Star Trek II: Wrath of Khan?
Is that the one where the stuff's coming out of the ears?
Yes, yes.
Yes, I still have nightmares about that one.
Khan! So I did like that one, but it's not one of my favorites. I enjoyed that. What other one did you say?
There's just Star Trek Into Darkness.
No, you said something else.
42 was the one I had said before that, I think.
Yeah, I don't remember. Anyway, I liked Star Trek Into Darkness as well, but it wasn't one of my favorites. What about 2014, Matt? Do you have any movies you got your eyes on for 2014?
I'm hoping to see Hobbit 2 in 2014.
Me as well. I'm actually hoping to go to it this week. Hoping to go do a date night on Friday to the Hobbit. So, I am looking forward to the one I'm looking forward to the most is X-Men Days of Future Past.
That could be good.
It is my favorite comic book storyline of all time. Was the X-Men Days of Futures Past, written by Chris Claremont on the X-Men comics back in the, I think, early 90s. It should be awesome, but you never know. You never know. We'll see. I'm excited for that one. I'm also excited for Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
And what about the new Captain America?
The new Captain America could be quite awesome. I'm also excited for that. I don't know. That one should be good. They're all good. But then I saw the trailers for Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit.
See, that's the one I want that one to be good. I want it to be good.
Yeah, but it looks like he's, like, I don't know. At least in the commercials, it looks like he's being Jason Bourne. But Jack Ryan's supposed to be smart, not, like, beat the crap out of people.
Right.
You know? So I want it to be good as well. And I'm hopeful that it'll be good. And one that I think could be intriguing, just because her face was made to play this part, was Maleficent. Have you seen this? It's like the Sleeping Beauty tale told from the perspective of the bad witch, and it's Angelina Jolie as the bad witch. She looks exactly the same as the Disney cartoon. Like, it's... She was born to play that part and to have someone's blood around her neck. But she stopped doing that.
That just got weird.
This whole podcast is weird. What are you talking about? All right, Matt. So let's leave this happy topic and go on to a depressing topic.
Oh, great. That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. I thought you'd like that. I thought you'd enjoy that. So, Matt, let's talk about how the Jets did not make the playoffs. It's depressing. I mean,
no, that's awesome.
That is pretty awesome. But I have to say, Rex Ryan actually might have done a decent coaching job this year, because I thought they'd be worse.
He did exactly what I would want him to do, not get the Jets into the playoffs.
Yes, yes.
I'm very pleased with his performance. I would bring him back.
Well, I would bring him back as well. And Geno Smith. He looks like he's got lots of potential to throw 15, 20 interceptions a year for the rest of his career.
June, he didn't do?
What didn't he do?
Butt fumble.
That's an excellent point, Matt. It's an excellent point. And the Patriots, of course, first round bye.
Yes.
I thought I'd drop that. I know most of you listening probably hate the Patriots, but if you hate greatness, that's your problem.
Yeah. It's okay. It's cool if you resent somebody being really good or something.
Yes, but I will tell you this. I am actually not a Tony Romo hater. I rooted for Kyle Orton when he played for Purdue. He does have a penchant for messing up in really big games, by the way. He did it at Purdue as well. I think they thought this was the moment where somebody else would come back, and if you watch that game, you'd think, oh my gosh, this is it. But we'll get
He's going to do it.
Yeah, we'll get to our Super Bowl picks in a minute, but it won't be Dallas, obviously. It won't be Dallas. Okay, Matt, so let's talk about the bowl game. The fight.
Hold on real quick. I just want to ask a question. Have Kyle Orton and Dave Grohl ever been seen together?
No.
In the same place at the same time?
They have not.
So there is not empirical evidence that they are two different people.
That is correct. Or Tony Romo, for that matter.
Okay.
I'm just saying, there's a lot of questions that have to be answered. And I'm pretty sure Jerry Jones actually isn't alive. It's a
robot. Do you know what, though? Did you see the guy in the Jerry Jones box taking his shirt off after the loss?
That was actually me.
I laughed so hard watching that as a GIF.
I know, GIF.
I completely lost my composure. I was crying. And I usually only do that when I listen to our podcast on public transportation. But I totally lost it. And I was trying to show it to my wife, and she's just staring at me like, are you okay? I can't breathe. I'm trying to get her to watch this video. I can't even breathe. It was a weird moment, but pretty hilarious.
It was pretty hilarious. I mean, I think there is an opportunity there to show the Cowboys owner's box throughout the entire game, like on a screen, picture-in-picture type of setup.
Yes.
Because I think there could be a lot of hilarity there. Lots of funny. But, Matt, were you surprised by any of the coaching fires today?
No. I was. Nothing there that really surprised me. I think everybody saw most of that coming. The Browns firing, I thought was a little bit of a surprise. Just what they give the guy a year.
Yeah, that one surprised me. I thought, you know, they were going to be terrible regardless of who their coach was. But apparently didn't think they'd be that terrible.
But I think everybody knew Schwartz was out. Everybody knew Shanahan was done.
Why? The Redskins look so good in 2012. They are a
dumpster fire right now.
Oh my gosh. I'm not really impressed with Robert Griffin III the way he's handled all this. I mean,
no. It has not gone well. Yeah. And I think he's getting bad advice.
Well,
or he's getting good advice and not listening to it.
But. Whenever you can hang out with the owner on the weekends, as he apparently does, that's good for the franchise. It's the owner from the owner. You should be hanging out with a couple of the players. That won't cloud your judgment at all on personnel matters.
Yeah, that's not going to get weird.
All right, Matt. Bowl game time. Fight Hunger Bowl. By the way, weird to watch a football game in AT&T Park.
Yeah.
And having the teams on the same sidelines is terrible.
Have a huge problem with that.
It's terrible. It changes how coaches coach. They're not used to it. I hope we never play in that park again, quite frankly. And it's a beautiful baseball stadium. I've been there for 3 games, including a playoff game. It's an awesome football stadium. It is a terrible, I mean, awesome baseball stadium. It's a terrible football stadium. No game should ever be played there again.
Now, I from what I saw, there was room on the other side to put a team over there.
It looked like it. I don't know. There must, for some reason, there must be, I can't imagine they just did it, you know, like spray painting your turf blue or something, you know, just to change it up and have something different for the bowl. So, Matt, what were your key takeaways from the game? What were the reasons, as you saw it, that BYU not only lost, but quite frankly did not, after halftime, it wasn't particularly close. I mean, they had their opportunities, certainly, to get back into it. But what were the big reasons as to why BYU couldn't beat Washington in the bowl game?
I think the biggest factor, in my opinion, was offensive line play. They did not look good. And, you know, they've been kind of up and down all year. But I think it makes it really difficult to get an offense going when a defense is getting that type of penetration or being able to really do whatever they want scheme-wise, you know, getting into the backfield. It really stymies an offense. The other is that special teams just seem to have completely checked out.
Boy, that was bad.
And it was just weird. I mean, the offsides on the kickoff where he stops like mid-run and then starts running again to kick the ball off, they get an offsides. And
yeah, it was strange.
The real serious breakdowns in assignment that set up a couple of scores.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't – it's really difficult to win – to win a football game when you give up multiple big plays on special teams.
Yes, it is hard. I mean, if you take away those big plays, maybe it changes the game, right? Mm-hmm. I agree with all of your takeaways. The other thing that was a mystery to me, and I don't know if this is one of the reasons we lost or not, but Jamal Williams touches the ball a total of 12 times.
Very strange.
It was odd. I mean, it wasn't that Hill wasn't running well. He ran well, especially when you take out the sacks, right? You know, he had a very good average, over 5 yards a carry. But 31 carries, well, you take out the sacks, it's more like 26 carries. That's a lot of carries for a quarterback. And maybe Williams was hurt. He didn't do a lot with his 12 touches, so maybe there was something we don't know, but I found that to be strange. The other part that you didn't mention, offensive line play, of course, was terrible. There were some just, on a couple of big plays, just bad play by defensive players. Fua's non-tackling of the quarterback, who's 5 yards past the line of scrimmage and still guarding his man, was weird. Like, Fua is extremely talented, but he's got to figure that stuff out. That is not a mistake you should be making at the collegiate level. I mean, the guy's 5 yards past the line of scrimmage. You got to go hit him, right? Yeah. Leave your man. He can't throw the ball. If he does, there will be a flag. So, I don't know. There were a few things. I thought the defense played okay, not great. I mean, they gave up 319 yards, which against that offense isn't terrible. But they did give up a couple of big plays in key spots where we needed them to make some plays. And then the other part was punting. I mean, 8-yard punt. I don't even know what to do with that, right?
And in that situation, they probably should have just gone for it anyway.
Well, they definitely, I totally agree with you. It's weird. You go for it on fourth down and do a fake punt in the first quarter from your own 25 or whatever it was. And then near midfield, later in the second half, you punt with a punter who was clearly struggling.
Yeah.
Was clearly not having his best day. So Matt, let's talk about key takeaways from the season. Let me give you a couple of statements, and you tell me if you're hot or cold on these statements. All right,
let's take a look.
BYU's offense was better in 2013 than they were in 2012. Are you hot or cold?
I'm cold.
You're cold. You don't think they were substantially better?
No. I mean, I think if they were better, or if there's some measure where you say, yeah, they were a little bit better, I think that the improvements minimal.
Okay.
They still seem kind of confused. The offense doesn't really, it hasn't clicked consistently enough for me to feel like there was really any marked improvement.
Okay. I am warm on that one. I'm not hot. I think they were better. I think the stats show they were better. They averaged almost 6 yards per play, 5.8 yards per play this year. It's 5.2 yards per play. So I'm not doing per yards per game, because when you're running 10 more plays a game, you get it'll kind of skew that. But yards per play, they're much better. But the 5.79 yards per play is not world beater, right? It's not a top offense. It's not Baylor. It's not what BYU used to do when Anai was here the first time, as far as yards per play that were more in the sixes. So I'm warm on that one, but not very enthusiastic. Another one for you, Matt. The go fast, go hard has failed as an offense. That just not the statistics, but just the whole theory of going fast, go hard is overused and overdone. I'll put it that way.
I'm hot on that one.
You think it's done?
If I had to evaluate it today, it is not a success. Well, in my opinion,
I didn't see a lot of evidence, especially against good teams, that it created mismatches or tired defenders, right? I just didn't see clear evidence that that was the case. And we were, the second fastest team in the country behind Texas Tech? I think they may have said that in the bowl game 74 times.
I don't think we have the right personnel to do exactly what it is that I believe Anai wants to do. And I don't think his play calling is varied enough to create the effect that he's after. You've got to call more than 8 different plays, to make this thing work.
I think we need to send him some game tape from Baylor.
Something.
Or several other teams I've watched their bowls. But we'll get to Anai here in a second. And Matt, one last one. The wide receivers after Cody Hoffman at BYU are terrible. Where are you on that one?
I'll say I'm cold on that. I don't know if I'd say they're terrible.
Okay.
They're not. None of them are starters at the Division I level right now. But you know that doesn't mean they're terrible.
Wow, you know, that was beautifully played, Senator.
But that's what we're looking at, right? I mean, and is it? But the question is it our perspective just skewed because Hoffman is very talented, and so there is going to be some drop off after Hoffman to whatever else you have left. But I think when you look at what there is past Hoffman, there just is not a lot there. And I don't know that these guys would be starting. They clearly wouldn't be starting at the schools that we're trying to, you know, get ourselves grouped with. Now, are they terrible? I don't know. Could they start somewhere in Division I football? Yeah.
Probably. So we had four guys catch more than 20 passes, okay, this season. Cody Hoffman, 57 passes, 894 yards in just 11 games. Ridley, 39 passes. Falslev, 34 passes in limited action. Mitch Matthews, 23 passes in just 9 games. Okay? If you look at their average per catch, everybody's low but Matthews and Hoffman. Okay? And Oppo had a lost season, right? He played 12 games technically. But I mean, he hardly played when he played, and I have to imagine that's mostly injury related. Because though I don't think he's nearly the receiver Hoffman is, he's not as bad as he was this year, or as unproductive, I should say, not bad. I'm not hot on that statement, but I'm kind of warm. They don't create separation, and when your offensive line is terrible, that's bad news for the quarterback because he can't even do quick routes. Right, unless it's that little slant we would do, option slant thing against the zone, or you know, tight man to man. There wasn't much of quick routes that we were able to run if your name wasn't Cody Hoffman. You know what I mean? Like, who else would you throw a wide receiver screen for anyone else on the roster besides Hoffman?
No, maybe Falslev, maybe.
Falslev, I wouldn't. I think his ability to make people miss is unfortunately not as much as we've been led to believe. His punt return average was evidence of that. But
oh jeez,
I'm just saying he is shifty, sometimes it gets him in trouble because he just moves side to side. You know.
But you know what? I here's the other thing though. When you talk about the wide receivers, and I think it's difficult to evaluate the talent there, given the way that the plays are set up. And this is, you know, this was fair a criticism enough that some people had of Anai 1.0 was an inability to use the entire passing tree. You know, we're not using all the routes that can be run here. And, you know, and I don't know if I feel like it's an Anai issue. I don't know if I'm ready to stick that on the wide receivers coach, you know. But I also don't think these guys are running really solid routes. But yeah, when everything is a slant, you know, when you got a slant or a streak downfield, those are basically your options. It's going to be hard for any wide receiver to really develop in a system like that.
Yeah, I agree. The routes are unimaginative. So let's go to this, Matt. We're going to do the hot seat meter, okay? We're going to talk about three people. We'll start with Mr. and I, okay? You've probably spent some time on Twitter this weekend and possibly Cougar Board. The Let's Fire Anai chants are loud and numerous. Now, as someone who has once chanted Let's Fire Anai, you are best qualified to talk about this. because you wanted him fired the last time.
I did.
So let's talk first, Matt, realistically, how realistic from blue cold to red hot is the seat sitting under Robert Anai? Not how you feel, but how realistically chances that you think he actually gets canned before next season?
It's a very, very light blue.
Yes.
He's not going to get canned.
I totally agree with you.
He's not going anywhere.
Yeah, I don't. It does not really matter that the fans are up in arms.
No.
I don't think I don't think this season will be viewed by the administration the same way it was viewed by the fans.
None of these seasons are viewed by the administration the same way they are by the fans.
No.
But the other thing, the thing about it is this, is, you know, you bring him back, he's going to install this new offense. He has plenty of things to say to defend himself for this season's performance. It's a new offense. We didn't have the right personnel. It took us time to figure it out. We didn't have a solid offseason with our starting quarterback because he had a knee injury. I mean, there's a lot of stuff you can say as Robert and I to defend the lack of production or lack of progress in the offense. And so okay. I think they give him some more time, even if just for that.
I agree. Now let's talk about you. So you're Tom Homo or you're Matt Mangum. Well, because you're not Tom Homo. You can't carry a mustache like he can.
And my Abraham Lincoln costume is not nearly as realistic.
No, not nearly. Not nearly.
His is shockingly so.
It's yes, he could have played him in the movie. Daniel Day-Lewis, move over, man. So, Matt, if you were the athletic director, what color would the seat be under Mr. and I?
There'd be no seat. I would have fired him yesterday.
I knew you were going to say that. Awesome. Awesome.
This makes no sense. If the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result, that is exactly a word to describe what's going on with the football program right now.
Let me put it this way. You know that I was not a supporter of firing him the first time.
That is correct.
I thought it was rash. I thought, or not renewing his contract. I know technically if you're on year-to-year contracts, it's not fired. But all things and purposes.
That's just the way to deal with the semantics.
Yes. So let's say, you know, he was fired and I was against it. I'm kind of with you, man. And here are the reasons. Here are the reasons, okay? First of all, this offense is unimaginative and it does not leverage the talents of the people that he has. If you look at Chip Kelly's great Oregon offenses, he would make slight adjustments. It was a running offense most of the time, not a passing offense, but he would make adjustments depending on his personnel. I don't think Anai figured out ever at any point in the season what the strengths were of the people he had on the field whose name was not Taysom Hill. He figured out how to use Taysom. He did not figure out how to use Jamal Williams. He did not figure out how to use Hoffman, I think, to the top of his ability. And to your point about the wide receivers, I don't think he figured out how to use those guys because they can't create separation on deep routes. Why are you having them run a bunch of freaking deep routes? Like, you're going to have these guys run a go? I mean, these guys can't. That's not their strength. You know, that's not Skylar Ridley's game. You know, and he's running go, and what do you know? He's covered. I would put him as like a hot orange. I guess I wouldn't totally fire him necessarily, but the message would be clear. You've got to spend this offseason figuring out how to revamp this offense. It can still be fast, but the point can't be going fast. The point has to be getting more than 6 yards per play.
I think I would fire him, and I would find somebody who would actually run an offense of what I was looking for. If what he was doing before didn't work, and as you noted when he was fired the first time, he put up a lot of numbers and scored a lot of points.
Yes, he did.
As an I 1.0. Okay, and they won a lot of football games running that offense, as predictable as it seemed. But this new offense he's doing, I don't think he knows how to do it. And before here, he's never run anything like this.
No.
You know, he watched them do it at Arizona, but let's be honest. I mean,
well, he was,
sure, they're in a BCS conference, but are they, you know, do they really count as a BCS team?
Well, and he wasn't making the
no.
He wasn't making the calls, right? I mean, no. He wasn't. It's the same plays all over again. And here we come, you know, almost every bowl game I've watched, and I've watched a lot of bowl games this year, they have wrinkles in their offense, things that they did not run all year. Because these people get a month to watch the tape on you, right? And, you know, it was clear what Washington was going to do. They were going to give you between the 20s. They were going to let us run and do our thing. And once we got in the red zone, the clamp came down. And there was no, besides the ill-advised, let's leave Cody Hoffman to get absolutely destroyed on a option pass.
Now, are you trying to end the career of your two best players on offense with
that play? Oh, my gosh.
Is that what you're trying to accomplish?
That play just – but there were no wrinkles. It was all plays we've been running all season long.
Well, and I think it was you that pointed this out to me in a conversation is that did not fool a single soul on their defense.
No.
The both of them, Hill was covered, Hoffman was covered and crushed. Like, it didn't fool anybody. I mean, what were we giving up? What we were apparently giving all sorts of information up at the line of scrimmage. Nothing was hidden. Nothing was a surprise.
Nothing was a surprise. It was, and the offensive line play, of course, as we talked about, was not good. And by this point in the year, I realized there's been some injuries and stuff, but you got to figure that out. I'm sorry. I mean, that's just, you have to figure it out.
There's going to be injuries, and there will always be injuries. You have to figure out, you have to learn to adapt.
Absolutely. You have to learn to adapt. And
The Cowboys did when Romo went down. They adapted.
Now you're just being mean.
Had to get that in there. Had to get, like,
now you're just being mean. Okay, so hot seat-o-meter, we both think he should be on the hot seat. Okay, or in your case, you said he shouldn't have a seat. Let's move on to the head coach, Bronco Mendenhall. There seems to be this raging, crazy debate on Twitter and Google board, where basically it's like these people that are defending Bronco as if he is without fault, and that's an exaggeration. I don't think most of them actually think that. And then on the other side, these people that fire Bronco tomorrow, he's terrible, he didn't use all of his practices, which, by the way, that is one of the lamest criticisms of a coach. I don't know why he didn't use all the practices. The guy has the best record in bowl games of any BYU coach ever. Okay? I mean, Lavelle was terrible in bowl games. So I don't want to hear that he doesn't know how to prepare a team for a bowl game. Did he make a mistake not using all the practices? Maybe. I mean, we clearly, special teams could have used a few more practices.
Hello.
But he also has to make a decision based on injuries and the temperament of his team and all those things, all right? That, to me, is not a reason to fire a coach, okay? But on the other hand, you know, you've got this debate going on, Matt. Where do you think he is on the hot seat-o-meter?
Where do I think he is?
Yeah.
Oh, blue, cold.
Cold blue, I totally
agree. They're not, this is not even on the radar of the administration to fire Bronco Mendenhall.
They're not talking about it. Anybody who thinks they are, you're letting your anger over what you believe Bronco to be bad at to cloud what is reality. They went 8-5 on the toughest schedule in probably the history of the program that wasn't as tough as I thought it would be, because Texas and Boise, among others, were not as good as I thought they would be. But the other part of this is this administration also remembers what happened before Bronco got there.
Yes. And what's interesting about this debate as it rages on the interwebs is the question is often introduced into the conversation, who do you hire if you fire Bronco Mendenhall? And there's not even a list. There isn't anybody to hire. And, you know, and people who really want to fire him say, well, you know, I don't care who they hire. Like, I just want a new coach. But you can't fire him unless you've got a plan. And right now, I don't think there's an option that provides BYU with any better chances of success than Bronco Mendenhall. I mean, when I say an option, I mean a realistic coaching candidate. There just isn't one. You know, and you don't want to go hire somebody that hasn't coached at a high level. You know, this isn't the place to cut your teeth as a head coach.
But isn't that who we're going to get though?
That's who we would get if you fired Bronco. That's who you would get, which is why I think it'd be a bad idea right now to fire him.
Yeah, I just when I hear people say to fire him, it's not that I think their criticisms. Well, some of them are ridiculous, but I think a lot of the criticisms are absolutely fair. I think he really bungled the whole coaching staff over the last couple of years.
Yes.
Bringing back an eye maybe isn't the best idea.
Hiring Doman was probably a mistake.
Making Doman
the offensive coordinator was a mistake. He was not ready for that.
He was not ready. I was actually okay with bringing an eye back because he was really good the first time. Put some top 30 offenses out there almost every year except for his last. And I thought he'll figure this out, but he did not. figure that out this year. But Matt, where would you put him on the hot seat-o-meter if you were the athletic director?
I wouldn't fire Bronkman at all if I were the athletic director. I'd be approaching it the same way. I don't have anywhere else to go. You know, we're going to do what we can to help him be successful. Maybe we've got to come up with some money to pay more to get a different offensive coordinator for him. I don't know. Maybe encourage him to get more involved in coaching the offense somehow. I'm really not sure what I would do there, but I don't see firing him really as an option. Where do you go from here?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. To me, he's a little bit on a light blue seat, maybe getting a little orange. I think his, you know, I don't put a lot of stock in managing fans, right? As I don't think that's a coach's job. I know people will disagree with me on that because they donate to the program, blah, 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 blah. 99% of fans don't donate jack squat, okay? Right. So, you know, what he's doing with the top donors, I don't have any idea because, quite frankly, very few of them are on Twitter or Cougarport. Sorry to burst your bubble, folks. But the point of it is, I'm with you. I don't know what else to go, but I do think he has his in-game decision-making is very inconsistent. Like, he's aggressive and then he's not. You know, I'd rather have a coach that goes for it on fourth down, fourth and short. We have an extremely good short yardage back. His name's Taysom Hill. And another good one, his name's Jamal Williams. You know what I mean? If it's fourth and three in midfield and we're down a couple scores in the second half in a bowl game, I want you to go for it. Right?
Oh, yeah.
I want you to go for it. And I was so
like you
happy.
Did, like you did earlier in the same game.
I loved the fake punt call. It was great. Awesome. Sorensen ran it to perfection. Washington inexplicably didn't seem to know it was happening, despite the fact that there was no punter back there. You know?
Yeah.
Like, it was a perfect call, and then things got very conservative. And that's a nice style on offense, which I don't mind running a draw when you're back in your own, you know, your own 15 and it's third and 12. You know what I mean? Like, play the field position battle there. But when you're down a couple scores in the second half, you got to be aggressive. You got to be aggressive. And he's just inconsistent in that, which can be frustrating. But I agree with you. He's not going to get fired, and nor do I think he should be fired. But I think some of the criticisms of him as a coach and how he runs his program are fair. Let me ask you one that we got in the tweet bag, Matt, from Jed Higginson, because he was the only one who sent us any tweet bag questions.
Tweet bag all-star tonight.
Tweet bag all-star. Prior to kickoff, Drew tweeted that the UW players were far more spirited than the BYU players' thoughts. Do you buy into that, Matt?
Oh, 100%.
Okay. So now, why do you think that would be the case? I mean, it's a bowl game. Why weren't the BYU players fired up for it as much as the Huskies?
I think there's a couple pieces to it. One, Bronco mentioned something in the last coach's show with Greg Rubel, and I mentioned this on the podcast last week.
2 weeks.
He made reference to this idea of the players were sick of me, I was sick of the players, we needed a little bit of time.
Yes.
I believe that there were there to be a book, an expose written on the 2013 Cougars, I think we would discover that there's a lot more going on underneath the surface than any of us are really aware of, that they've managed to keep kind of under wraps. I don't know if it's quite on the level of Jaime Hill, like picking fist fights with offensive linemen, but I would not be surprised to find out that there's something brewing there that we don't know about. And I think it went into the decision-making to have that break. And I don't think the break fixed the problem. And so to hear that they were not as fired up and ready to go didn't shock me. They weren't fired up and ready to go to Nevada. They weren't fired up and ready to go the last few weeks of the season. It's not a shocker to me.
I think if you look at the schedule of this year, okay, you can say things seem to fall apart after the loss against Notre Dame. Maybe before that game, but maybe it's after Wisconsin. But the effort, and I hate to say stuff like that, because typically I really criticize people when they talk about effort. I think mostly that's a euphemism for winning or losing, right? And if you lose, it was a poor effort. And if you win, it was a good effort. That being said, I actually agree with what Drew Jay tweeted right before the game. Not that I know, because I didn't see it, but there did seem to be kind of a lack of urgency across the board. And that Nevada game, quite frankly, was one of the most lethargic efforts I've ever watched BYU. Nevada's terrible. They are barely a top 100 team. We should have steamrolled them by 3 or 4 touchdowns. And it was a close game. That's just, to me, it's inexcusable. And the Washington loss, though, Washington's a good team, though. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, everyone looks at their record and say, oh, they weren't very good. Look at who they lost to and the margins of error. And Pac-12 was a really good conference this year. And there's a reason that Sarkisian got hired at USC, and it's not just because he coached there. He did a really good job this year, and they had a good team, and it recruited well. But that being said, not good, Matt. Not good when you're when it looks like you're not all psyched about the game, and it's a bowl game.
Well, it makes you wonder. You know, you get to that point, and I'll ask you this question. I mean, is this a signal that we're not cut out to be independent? That we need something more to play for, as it were. We need to be aiming at conference championships, and. You know, and whatever bowl game tie-ins come along with that.
I don't know. I do think there could be a psychological factor to being independent that could be a negative for motivational purposes. I think fighting for that conference championship, fighting for the better bowl tie-in, could be motivating. I do think, though, that I think that could be overstated, though. I think they had everything to play for, and I think it's very, just like it when you have in a conference, had they lost, say it was a conference game when they lost to Wisconsin, it knocked them out of contention for the conference championship. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's any different than that, quite frankly. I think it's the same. So I don't think you have to be in one. We need to put this on the docket for a future conversation. I think for the future of college football, we may, and I've come 180 degrees on this one, I think we may have to get it back into one. So, that may force us back in. But I don't think we're going to look at, well, we got to join the Mountain West so we have something to fight for. I want that game against Wyoming to mean something.
If you're going to, I guess we'll have this conversation on a different podcast, but I wouldn't want this team to go to the Big 12.
Well, we can talk about that another time. I don't know if the Big 12 is an option. I don't know if the Big 12 is an option, but going back to Mountain West isn't going to help your playoff chances a whole lot easier if you're playing cupcakes every week. And Boise State, as I mentioned before, I don't think they're going to be very good going forward without Peterson. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think I'm right. I think Chris Peterson equals the Boise State football program, and he built it. And anyway, all right, Matt, let's take a quick look at 2014. Okay, we got a question from Jed on this. He asks about, let's see, what did he say? How many wins do we think? So we'll do our quick win thing, Matt, all right? We love to do, and we'll do like 80 times over the offseason and change every time.
Awesome, because I've already practiced this month, and I'm changing my mind already.
All right. At UConn to start.
Win.
Win. We'll destroy him. At Texas on September 6th. It's hard to say. We don't even know who the coach is going to be, right? But I'm with you. I would predict a loss. I think they will be better. Virginia and Provo.
A win.
I agree. So we're up to 2. Houston and Provo.
A loss.
Ooh, really?
Yeah.
Ah, that's a win. We'll beat them at home. Utah State and Provo.
Chucky Keaton's gone, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a win.
That's a win. So you're up to 3, I'm up to 4. Central Florida in Orlando. They were pretty good this year.
Yeah, I think that's a loss.
I'm with you, that's a loss. Nevada and Provo, win.
That's a win.
Boise in Boise, win.
Yeah, I think that's a win.
Middle Tennessee in Tennessee, win.
Yep.
UNLV in Provo.
That's a win.
We're up to 8. You're up to 7, right?
Mm-hmm.
Savannah State, that's a win.
Yep.
I'm up to 9. You're up to 8. And then at Cal, Matt. That one is a tough one.
That is a tough one.
I have no idea how good they're going to be next year. I mean, they were terrible this year, right? They were 1-11.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to have to say a win. I'm going to have to say a win.
Yeah, I'll say it's a win.
Because they were terrible. I can't assume they're going to get that much better. It is on the road, but they could likely be terrible again. So you had how many wins?
I ended up with 9.
And I ended up with 10 before the bowl game, which we don't even know what the bowl game will be, by the way. Makes me nervous. But I think we could not be any better and worse than last year and win 10 games.
Yeah.
And it will make people feel all warm and fuzzy, but it's not necessarily any better than this year.
No, this is like when Jay Keeps came on at the end of a season against terrible competition, yes, and everybody thought he was the next big thing.
This is not a great schedule.
That's what next season is going to be. This we're going to win 9 or 10 games, and everybody's going to start saying, oh, well, they figured this out, and Taysom Hill's going to run all over Virginia and Utah State and Nevada and Boise and Middle Tennessee and Savannah State. He's going to crush these teams, and everyone's going to feel like they cracked the code.
Here's the problem, okay? The next year, we start off with Nebraska, Boise State, and Michigan.
Hello.
2 of those road games.
Yeah, we're 0-3.
Very possibly you could start out as 0-3. The rest of the schedule is fairly cupcakeian, if that's a word.
Well, that'll be great, because they'll make a great recovery and bounce back from a tough start.
Fresno State could be good, and I'm so glad we'll be back in the Poinsettia Bowl than the Fight Hunger Bowl, an actual football stadium.
Yeah, that will help.
In a city that has warm weather. Okay, Matt, of those 2014 matchups, Jed asks, what's the most interesting to you?
But did he say besides Texas?
Did he say besides Texas?
I thought that he did. Because I was having a real hard time answering his question.
Oh, if other than Texas, Texas, yes, other than Texas. I think it's Central Florida, quite frankly. I don't think it's really that close.
Yeah, I guess.
They were really good this year. 11-1, right?
Yeah.
So I'd say Central Florida. I think that's a huge win if you beat UCF in Orlando. It could be the signature win of the season if you can pull it off. Or it would be, unless you beat Texas and Texas.
I mean, they were pretty good this year, right? I mean, they lost a close game to South Carolina.
Yeah, South Carolina.
They really beat some folks.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're playing in their bowl game.
Baylor, they're going to get crushed.
They'll probably get crushed. But that doesn't mean they weren't a good team. I mean, Baylor's one of the best teams in the country. So, there's no shame in that, right? Texas just got lit up by Oregon. I'm not about to start calling them a bunch of pansies or something.
I'll tell you what, if I were looking at UCF's schedule in 2014, they played Penn State in Dublin, Ireland to open up the season.
Who doesn't?
That's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
BYU needs to do one of those.
Yeah, why not? Why not? All right,
I think,
Matt.
You could theoretically, I mean, you may be able to get some BYU fans out in a place like that.
Yeah, we got BYU fans everywhere. We could play anywhere. I'm not saying we'd win. All right, Matt. So let's talk basketball.
Oops. Okay?
And let's just say we were recording this during the Pepperdine game.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't. Have you seen the halftime score?
I have not.
I've
been busy talking to you.
They're down 12 at halftime.
Oh, well, that's encouraging.
Yeah, so that result will be known by the time you listen to this podcast, folks. So let's talk about the basketball team, Matt. Last time we talked about it, we both thought that they would. This was before the losing streak. We thought they were both. There was even a possibility of going undefeated in conference. Not likely, but a possibility. I think we're both probably off that train, right?
I have disembarked.
Okay, so let's talk about... I have identified, because I'm magnanimous, the 3 biggest problems with the Cougars, and let's talk about them.
All right, what do we have?
Defense.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people talk about Jimmer, and they should. He was awesome. Okay? But I think what made that team just really made that team so dangerous that last year that Jimmer was there was, you might remember another guard who was quite awesome. And he didn't score as many points, though he was a good three-point shooter. And he was, let's say, a fantastic defender. Do you have any idea who I'm talking about?
I think I know who you're talking about. I think he's pretty popular on Twitter these days.
He's very popular on Twitter and has not had a lot of really positive things to say lately about the Cougars. And I actually saw, we're speaking of Jackson Emery, of course, David Nixon was very similarly very critical. Now, we'll see how critical he is now that his sister's marrying Taysom. But Jackson Emery, to me, is the player we don't have anymore. We have Tyler Hawes, who can fill up the bucket, right? Not as good as Jimmer, but he's quite good at scoring points. We don't have a Jackson Emery.
No, Jackson Emery was very good at breaking one of the Ten Commandments.
Stealing?
Yes. And there is nobody that does that. I mean, let's be honest, though. He did some things on a level that's pretty rare when you think about it.
Yes.
But we don't have any – there's nobody who's kind of filling that role. You know, and when you look at good basketball teams at the college and the pro level – You need a defensive guy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely do need that defender on the perimeter, and we're getting lit up by not really that great offensive players. I'm not saying they're bad, but there's been some players, and the frustrating thing is we have beat and almost beat some of the best teams in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And then we lose to Loyola Marymount. We're losing to Pepperdine as we speak. I don't even know. Quite frankly, I don't even know how to even talk about that.
I mean, in it with Wichita State to the end, that game was closer than the final score shows.
Yes.
You know, in it with UMass, you know, both of these teams, you know, good teams, ranked teams.
Yes.
In it with Oregon, but crushed by Utah.
But beat crushed by Utah, though Utah Loyola I think Marymount? Is better than we think, and then beat by Loyola Marymount. That's we have a loss against a team that's not even in the top 150 RPI.
That is a bad loss. When you look at tournament resumes, that loss is a problem.
So before that loss, Andy Katz on ESPN said, "Hey, they're building a pretty interesting resume. If they can beat Gonzaga once, there's a really good chance they sneak into the tournament." And then he said after the Loyola Marymount loss, he tweeted, they're going away. If they lose to Pepperdine tonight, we're in big trouble.
It's done.
We've got to win the conference tournament or have some crazy conference run. Beat Gonzaga twice. You know,
yeah, but something if like this that. Team, but right now, do you think does this team look like a team that's going to run the table in the tourney?
No. No, I don't think this looks like a team that's going to run the table in the tourney. So let's get to the second problem, Matt. So the second problem that I have identified, because I'm magnanimous, is we don't have depth. For the second year in a row, there's just not a lot of depth, you know, especially in the front court. You get past Mika. And, I mean, Austin's okay. We talked about him before. He's okay. But he should, for a team that has tournament aspirations, he should be a bench guy. And then after that, it gets really thin. Luke Worthington, great lip syncer, hasn't really found his groove yet on the basketball court.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah,
found his groove. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. And Josh Sharp is just, he hasn't played that much this year. And when he has played, it hasn't been that effective. So Matt, I mean, the last one is point guard play. We talked about this before, Matt. Matt Carlino is just all over the place. And I know people are talking about now, well, now he's splitting time on the point guard and stuff. He wasn't splitting time earlier in the year. And even against Oregon, he played 37 minutes, right?
Mm-hmm. You know who I want to see more of? Frank Bartley the fourth.
I would also like to see more of Skylar Halford. He's been hitting 3 points at a ridiculous rate. 46%.
46% is good.
It's not. It's limited, but Carlino's hitting him at 28% this season. That's terrible. And below his career averages.
Do you know who else that's below?
Who else is that below?
FB4.
Yes.
Of course,
yes,
he's only shooting it at 33% from beyond the arc.
But behind Collinsworth?
He's a player that's got some real promise, I think. He's a pleasant surprise for me this season. I think he's got a future.
I think him and Halford both need to play more.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, at the expense of Carlino. I'm not a Carlino hater. People know that if they've listened to the podcast. But his enigmatic play is just a little much.
Well, and we know that he's up and down. And when he's down, you got to give him the hook.
You do have to give him the hook when he's down. Unfortunately, you know, he's had some... I mean, he had the Texas game where he had 5 of 7 threes, right? But if you take away Texas and Wichita State, he has not made very many threes.
Well, and I think some players, when they struggle, they can play through that in game and get out of that slump. But that doesn't appear to be how Carlino works.
I agree.
When he's down, he's down. And when that's true, like, you gotta go to somebody else.
All right, Matt, we're off basketball, and it's time to rapid fire preview the rest of the bowl games. We don't have that many. Are you ready?
Oh man, I got it. Where did my screen go? What am I going to do? All right, like it matters. I'm just making it up anyway.
Yeah, you're making it up. You don't even know what you're talking about.
All right, let's go.
All right, so Matt, we have starting on January 1st. If you want to know how we thought about all the other bowl games, listen to our extremely long podcast from 2 weeks ago. All right, January 1st, we have a set of bowl games that does not really enthuse me. I'll be honest. All right. The first one is the TaxSlayer.com Gator Bowl. Great name. Nebraska, 8-4 out of the Big Ten. Georgia, 8-4 out of the SEC with lots of SEC speed.
SEC speed, baby.
Who you got?
I got Georgia.
I also have Georgia.
Out of the speed Eastern Conference.
It's percent chance that you watch some of this game.
100%.
100%.
Ah. Yeah, probably.
Yeah, it's the noon game.
Right, but it's my son's birthday that day.
Tell him
so
to
somewhere in
the
here
next
I'm going to miss some football.
Tell him to celebrate the next day. He'll be fine.
Well, I think we should celebrate it by watching college football.
I think that's wonderful. All right. At the exact same time is the inexplicably placed on New Year's Day Heart of Dallas Bowl.
It makes no sense.
Presented by Plains Capital Bank. We don't care, Plains Capital Bank.
But how do they can't get their name into the name of the bowl like everybody else?
No, isn't this Jerry Jones's bowl?
Oh, this is the Jones Bowl.
I'm surprised it doesn't have his plastic face on there.
I'm surprised it doesn't have the name of the guy who took his shirt off in the press.
That's right. That's right. He'll get another chance. UNLV 7-5 out of the Mountain West. That's right. They had 3 Mountain West losses. Really awesome. And North Texas 8-4 out of Conference USA. I'm just gonna pick North Texas. What the heck? I don't care.
In a game like this, Adam, everybody loses.
That's right. That's right.
But I'm gonna also go ahead and pick North Texas.
Percent chance I watch in this game. Maybe I flip over when there are breaks with the other game for the first hour until the other games start.
If I watch some of this game, it will be by accident.
All right. The next one up on ESPN is the Outback Bowl. That's 8-4 Iowa out of the Big Ten, 9-3 LSU out of the SEC. This is an interesting game. I think LSU will kill them, though.
I'm going to go ahead and pick the underdog, Iowa, because I'm a Big Ten homer.
Nice. Nice job, Homer.
And any team that's named after a character from MASH gets my vote.
Good point. I think that's exactly where they got it. Matt, percent chance you watch some of this game?
I'll see some of this game.
Yeah, 100% for me. At the exact same time, inexplicably, is...
You've used that word a lot.
I don't think it means
what you think it means.
True. Number 19, Wisconsin, 9-3 out of the Big Ten.
Big Ten. You coming down to Texas?
I'm doing the SEC. Number 9, South Carolina, 10-2 out of the SEC. This is actually, it might be, no disrespect to the Rose Bowl, this is the one I'm most excited about all day. This is my must-watch game, is the Capital One Bowl for New Year's Day.
Yeah, this will be a very good game.
Yes. I think Wisconsin is one of the top 10 teams in the country. And I think South Carolina is quite, quite good. This should be fun to see. 100% chance I watch this one. I'm picking the Badgers.
Picking the Badgers, are you?
Upset. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got the Gamecocks in this one, and I will watch this game.
Pansy. All right. At 5 o'clock is the granddaddy of them all, which I'm not sure that's actually true anymore. Number 5, Stanford, 11-2 out of the Pac-12, and number 4, Michigan State, 12-1. Big Ten champions, thanks to their defeat of poor Urban Meyer.
I love it when he loses.
It was so sad that he wasn't able to get to the national championship game and lose it. So we've got Stanford and Michigan State. Matt, I assume there's 100% chance both of us watch some of this game.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I am picking Michigan State, actually.
I will say one thing about this game is that Vizio has come a long way. I believe that that BYU played in a Las Vegas Bowl that was presented by Vizio years ago. And now here they are with their name on the granddaddy of them all.
That's right. Oh, and percent chance you see any of the parade on television.
Yeah, my kids love parades. We'll end up watching some parades.
Unfortunately, I think we will too.
And I'm also going to watch Michigan State beat Stanford.
Yeah, that's what I like to hear. Then the nightcap, Matt. Also an exciting game, potentially. We discussed this a little bit previously, the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl. Tostitos. Number 15, UCF, 11-1 out of the American Conference. I don't even know what that is. Wasn't it called the Big East?
And I thought they were just going to call that the Hodgepodge Conference. The
Hodgepodge Conference.
The Raggedy Ann and Andy Conference.
Did you just say Raggedy Ann and Andy?
Yeah.
That's a terrible reference. You're a
terrible reference.
That's true. Number 6, Baylor, 11-1, 8-1 out of the Big 12. Matt, I've got Baylor in this one, and there's 100% chance I see some of this game and probably all of it.
I'll watch the first half while it's still interesting. Baylor's going to crush UCF.
Yeah, I think they're going to crush them.
They're going to score 50 points.
Yeah, they average 53, so you're not exactly... giving them that much credit. All right, so Thursday the 2nd, and I hate that these games should all be on New Year's Day. I know I say this every year, and I'm a broken record, but I'll keep going. Oklahoma, 10-2 out of the Big 12. This is the Sugar Bowl. Alabama, 11-1. Poor Alabama. So, Matt, I'm actually going to pick Oklahoma.
Are you crazy?
I am, but here's the thing. Do you think anybody on that Alabama team gives a crap about this game?
No.
No,
they don't.
And they're not as good as they were last year. And I think Oklahoma, this is their chance. This is it. This is your chance to go out and beat what many people still believe is the best team in the country, which is ludicrous. They lost. Sorry, guys. So
I don't think Nick Saban lets his team do that.
Actually, that's totally true. I'm not picking Oklahoma. I'm totally joking. Alabama.
Saban is one of the greatest college football coaches of all time.
Saban's going to have these guys so worked up, they come out and crush them. I'm totally joking.
And I'll tell you what, the ones that don't want to play, he just won't bring them. And he'll play his third stringers and still beat Oklahoma.
Well, that's because they'd start
on
Oklahoma.
As long as they don't kick any very long field goals to look them up 5 yards short.
Yikes. All right, Friday the 3rd, Matt, we've got two games, AT&T Cotton Bowl, Oklahoma State, 10-2 out of Big 12. Missouri, 11-2 out of the SEC. I love this matchup. 100% chance I watch it, or at least some of it. And I'm going to go with Missouri.
I'm going to go with Missouri and also predict very obnoxious SEC chants by the Missouri fans taunting their former Big 12 brethren.
Yeah, that's lame. If that's the case, then I hope Oklahoma State wins.
That's what's going to happen.
Well, I hate conference chance. You know that. You're not the conference. You're a team in the conference. Okay? So stop it. Every team that does conference chance. Especially if you're Vanderbilt. All right? Stop it. And we'll get to that in a second.
SEC.
Yes, you're 4-4. Here's your gold star. All right. Then the Discover Orange Bowl that night. 12-1 Ohio State. Wah, wah, wah. And 10-2 Clemson. I will probably watch some of this game, but only if Clemson is ahead. And I am predicting them to win.
Clemson wins.
Yeah, I think Clemson wins. All right. Saturday the 4th, the BBVA Compass Bowl. Like, why is it on the 4th of January? I have no idea. It will also be going up against NFL playoff football.
Yikes.
Yeah, think about that for a second.
The good news is no one in Houston will be watching the NFL playoffs.
Wah, wah, wah.
They've cornered that market.
I've overdone that. It's dead. Vanderbilt, 8-4 out of the SEC. Houston, 8-4 out of the American. I'm going to go with Houston in this one and the upset.
Yeah, the Cougars win this.
Yeah, and there's zero chance I see any of this game.
I won't even know that it's happening.
Yes, I'll be watching NFL playoffs. Then Sunday the 5th, in a night game, the GoDaddy Bowl.
This is okay. Really a bowl? This is the second to last bowl they have to offer me?
Yes. Arkansas State, 7-5 out of the Sun Belt, and Ball State, 10-2 out of the MAC. I won't watch any of this game.
This is insane.
It's just stupid.
This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
This bowl game should be on the 20th of December.
I'm not even going to predict a winner here.
I'm fine with that.
You've got to be kidding me. This is the second to last bowl game? Are you kidding me?
No, we are not kidding.
That's just stupid.
It's absolutely stupid.
It's in Mobile, Alabama.
And you'd have to watch like 10 really lame GoDaddy commercials.
What stadium is this even in?
Where is it? Mobile?
What, the Ladd Peebles Stadium? What stadium is that?
I don't know. I think it's high school stadium.
This is just
ludicrous. It's stupid. It's absolutely stupid. All right, and then Matt, here's the big one. The BCS National Championship, also presented by Vizio, by the way. I would prefer that it was presented by Dr. Pepper. Florida State, undefeated Florida State, ACC champs, 12-1 Auburn. They're the SEC champs. Matt, I believe 100% chance we both watch this game. Fair to say?
Yes. Oh, absolutely fair to say.
I am really excited about this, and I think Florida State wins.
Oh, that's nice, because that's not what's going to happen. War Eagle, baby. Auburn wins.
You think Auburn wins? Do you think it's close?
Yes, I think it's very close, okay. And they win it in the fourth quarter.
All right. Well, the spread has, as you might know, the spread has Florida State, 8.5-point favorites?
Is that right? What did Vegas predict Alabama to do to Auburn?
They predicted a large win by Alabama.
Everybody crowned Alabama early. Nobody was paying attention to the other teams at the top of the SEC. And what we discovered is there was a team just as good as Alabama, and it's Auburn. If Alabama were in this game playing Florida State, everybody would have them picked to win.
That's true. I think that's true. Let me ask you another question about this game, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
So Winston wins the Heisman. Which mm-hmm. is now, after having no freshman ever, has done two freshmen in a row.
Yeah, it worked out really well last time, so I'm glad they went together.
That's my question, Matt. So, over under 50% chance Winston becomes a disaster as a sophomore like Mansell did.
Oh, way over 50%. The good news is that he's learned some of that lesson, and I understand that Mansell had some advice for him.
Yeah,
Heisman weekend, just said, hey, listen, just so you know, like, this is really going to change things for you in ways that I wasn't expecting. But you know what? This seems to me like one of those things, like, somebody can tell you, like, this is what crazy things are going to happen to you when you win the Heisman. You're never going to believe that stuff when you're a freshman in college. It's not even going to sink in.
No.
You know, and this, you know, and so I.
Well, I wouldn't have even, quite frankly, I wouldn't have given him the Heisman.
No, I would have given it to Jordan Lynch.
You would have given it to Lynch?
Come no. Come on.
Who would you have given it to, honestly?
See, I don't know. That's the problem.
That's why he won, right?
Yep.
That's why he won. It's not because I don't. Do you think he was the best player in college football?
Probably not.
You know, I don't know who I would have given it to.
But see, I would consider a wider range of players than they typically do for the Heisman.
Yes,
because they don't really look at defense because there's no good stats for it.
Yes, they don't look at defense, which I think is unfortunate. I think Bryce Petty would have been a great choice out of Baylor. I think he would have been a great choice. I mean, his stats are pretty darn comparable to Winston's. I mean, actually, they're almost identical from a passing perspective. So and he finished like 7th or 8th. You know what I mean? Like, I do find it a little weird. AJ McCarron should be nowhere near 2nd. You know, nothing against the guy, but he's not as good as the other guys on here. And I think Derek Carr's really good out of Fresno State, but they don't do non-BCS guys anymore.
Nope.
You gotta be a BCS guy.
That's the problem.
You gotta be a BCS guy.
So. Which is also kind of stupid, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, is it award for the best player or the best player on a BCS team?
I mean, like, so does the running back out of Arizona really get a look there?
No.
What about the quarterback out of Oregon? I thought he was pretty good.
Yeah, he was injured, though, some. But he's not even, he didn't get any significant votes.
No, he wasn't really, really, really a candidate.
Well, and the other thing is, for some reason now, it's also tied to winning, which annoys me to death. So it's basically the best player on the undefeated team or close to undefeated team. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Annoys me. But I wouldn't have given it to him, and I'm with you. I would go way over 50% that next year is a disaster.
But then you got guys like Andre Williams out of BC. I mean, the guy had a great season.
Yeah, but he plays for BC. I mean, and they weren't great. That's just how it goes.
Right.
That's how it goes. I agree with you, and I think it's I think voters have gotten very lazy. Which is unfortunate. But that being said, he was a terrific player this year. And I think he will play well. Obviously, I'm picking Florida State, so I think he will play well. You obviously do not.
I think he'll play well. I think they're a good team, and I think he's a good football player. But I think Auburn is a lot better than people are giving them credit for.
Oh, I totally I agree with you. I would take the under on the 8.5-point favorites. But I think Florida State ends up winning. But I think giving up more than a touchdown to Auburn, I'd feel a little bit better if Auburn's defense was better. They're good, but that's the thing that separates Alabama last year from any team this year. There's nobody that's got that good of a defense that's in this game. So
yeah.
All right. Well, Matt, that's another podcast.
Wow, another one in the books.
More than an hour of pure awesomeness.
Pretty much.
So we'll be off next week due to some business travel and other things. We'll be back in 2 weeks with more of the Rise and Shout podcast. Excited to be back. Hopefully everyone's listening and enjoying. And of course, catch us on iTunes. Check out great BYU coverage at loyalcougars.com. And we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars! If blood will flow, pleasure steal our one.